Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Stephen Clare and the Pushbacks are playing at the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio in Albany, New York, on Friday, May 18th.
I sit alone right here, don't fear, don't worry. It's no skin off me, and I don't want to take your place. I just deal with how it comes. It's not the way I planned. It's not anything I can understand. It's just the way I feel that I must deal, and it's all my own. So I have to go.
Stephen Clare is a longtime touring singer, songwriter, and writer who has landed in Beacon, New York, where he founded and runs the Beacon Music Factory. He joins me today to talk about his album with the Pushbacks in advance of their show in Albany tomorrow. Stephen Clare, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to be here.
The Pushbacks, Is that a new band?
Yes, the answer is yes. It's a new band. I've played in various configurations over the years, have spent a lot of time playing solo on and off over the last couple of decades. I've always dreamed of having a big band, and this is a five-piece. A five-piece for me is gigantic. It's really exciting. You know, it's guitar, bass, drums, keys, and baritone sax,
awesome.
Which really, you know, it's another dimension. It feels luxurious.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
I love when you add a brass.
Totally.
It adds so much, just the one horn.
Yeah.
How did you put the group together? Tell us about the band.
It evolved out of, what ended up becoming this album was me sort of taking my time to try to record some new material in the best possible way with no sort of time frame or end point or plan or deadline in mind, but just to record something that I felt really good about and was as rich as what I was hearing in my head. I own and run a music school in Beacon where I live called the Beacon Music Factory, and it's dynamite in all kinds of ways, and it's growing all the time, and it's fantastic. And we have great teachers, and we have many teachers. And, you know, a couple of these people teach at the school. And so we have these sort of like diverse kinds of people in the band with really different sort of backgrounds, like the baritone sax player, Brad Hubbard, for example. You know, he's a classical sax player, you know, classically trained. Not only do I have a baritone sax guy, but a guy with that perspective,
right?
You know,
yeah, from a different realm.
Yeah. So as I brought in different people to play on the record, it just kind of stuck and became a thing, and we would rehearse stuff, and then we played a show, and you know, now there's this sort of it's a band. It's a band.
For the eight songs that are on the album, were they all written? Had you written all of them before you started recording them with the musicians that you've gotten together for the project?
They were recently written songs last year or two before, you know, I started recording. So yeah, it was newer material, some of which was developed in the studio or in rehearsal with them, especially things like harmony vocals. Like, this is the first time I've explored harmonies to the degree, you know, to a whole new level. Like, and you know, we're taking those out live. Like, that's really nice to be able to have. Not only is the band big, but like, you get four people singing on top of it. It's really nice and expansive.
Do you always get to, in the harmony, sing the melody? Or do you have to?
Heck yes. But that doesn't, you still have to know what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. Yeah, you can't get pulled over into the harmony discordant thing happen.
Yeah.
So tell me about writing the songs. With your schedule, running the school and having a family and everything that you have to do, when do you write songs?
That is the question. But that's also one of the, in a way, having parameters and having strict limitations can also be really beneficial, because you take that time, or you make that time in a very serious way. So whether it's at 5:30 a.m. before you have to wake everybody up for the school day, or, you know, or after they go to bed, or in an hour that you, you know, steal between doing admin and teaching.
Right.
You know. So you make those times count. And yeah, I was thinking on the way up here about the advent of the voice memo app that comes on your iPhone, because that's become my journal, you know, like ideas land there. So mm-hmm. I have like a bazillion voice memos in my iPhone for like song ideas or, you know, pieces of songs.
So it's a place you deposit lyrics and
right.
melodies, little
right.
tunes
exactly.
you think of.
Which makes it super handy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but then it
great.
Becomes unwieldy if there are too many.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine.
And sometimes you have time to give the file a name and then but then there are also all the files that are named new recording 27,
right.
new recording 83.
Do you ever hear something in your that you've put in your phone
mm-hmm.
and go, well, what was I thinking? Like that's already a song. Like or that doesn't work at all, or I don't even like that, and then just get rid of it. So then is it all the more satisfying when you enter your phone again and you pick up a lyric that you put in there and you're like, oh yeah, that's really good. I can do something with this.
Yeah. All of those things are true. just like having a old school handwritten journal, I might listen to a voice memo and it could be just, I'm speaking a line just so that I remember the line. And I'll be like, what was I talking about? I don't know what to do with this.
Like trying to describe a dream to somebody.
Delete. You know? or other times, you know, it'll fit perfectly with some other notion that was already kind of, you know, revealing itself. So I'll be able to like put pieces together with any of those bites or pieces that are sort of song suggestions. Really, I just need to make the time. It's one thing to get them down.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to take the time later to really just sit and ruminate and see where they go.
Tell me about the song Take It Downtown. Tell me about the story of that song and writing it and what you wanted to get
yeah.
across with it.
Okay, well, Take It Downtown is the song that's kind of gotten the most attention, at least from radio. But it, I could talk about, along with a song on there called Typing Tipsy,
mm-hmm.
Where I certainly am not alone in my concerns over our obsession, shall we say, with our little devices. And so I try to talk about the wormhole that is the smartphone, and how it, you know, steals our attention, and Take It Downtown and social media kind mm-hmm. of like together. So like Take It Downtown talks about like an imagined sort of like interaction, an imagined sort of real life, possibly interaction with someone whom there's this sort of scenario where you become Facebook friends with someone you don't really know.
Right.
And then you try to like fill in like, or you could, in the case of the song, sort of fictionally fill in like, I know you from Facebook, but you know, we have this in common and this in common. I'm piecing this together. And then you can kind of like unspool and, you know, that's kind of where that song is coming from.
I know you from Facebook in your wool merino. We probably haven't met. I know you work at the casino. We got some mutual friends like Jeanette who lives in Reno. I met her at that party down in San Marino. She was drinking Pellegrino, says she's laying off the vino. The next thing that you know, there's some incriminating photo, like that selfie with your sister in Redondo, holding up a sign that says, take me downtown.
And then Typing Tipsy is really about an observation of someone who's like at a concert and not watching the concert, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of Instagramming or on their phone typing the entire time. And that's how they're experiencing that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you think that's great when they do that?
It's awesome.
No, it's awesome. The worst.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe the worst thing for someone else is that scenario where you're watching a concert through the phone
of
someone
you.
Standing in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
how did we get here?
Yeah, how did we? Yeah.
She's tapping tipsy, typing unanswered texts in the dark in the Beacon Theater. At a hold steady show, the band's taking it slow. It's a four-night stand, catch it if you can. She's got tickets to spare. She's dyed her hair. She's here all week, tapping tipsy. Her thumbs, are they nimble, are they numb? She trips on a speech, she sways by a seat. She's somebody's girl, wishes you were here. But even if you were, she'd still be tapping tipsy. It's kind of pretty, socially mediating, meditating on a screen. The band's a scream, the crowd sings along. They know every word to every song. But she's looking down, tapping tipsy.
These are songs that are, you know, they sound, if you just threw it on and didn't listen to the lyrics, they're like of a time when you came up, stuff that inspired you. And then when you listen to the lyrics, you're like, there's also very now.
Timely. Yeah,
very now. Yeah. 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 Not that old songs are outdated.
No.
Universal
no.
human experiences, right, but the specifics.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Tell me about I Found You, the song I Found You.
Okay. Well, I Found You, I don't know how you would describe that, but I don't know. It's a little heavier, a little darker, but at the same time, rocking and a little bit relentless. I don't know if relentless is the word, but it's steady, pulses along. But it uses there's this Iggy Pop documentary that Jim Jarmusch made. And in it, Iggy Pop, so if you look at a song like Typing Tipsy of mine, where it's just like, it's so many syllables, it's so many words, I have such a habit of like, going on and on, like being verbose and like kind of clever-ish, you know, in my lyric writing. Iggy Pop says something in this documentary about how some school teacher of his, like an English teacher or something, told him to try to write a poem using not more than 24 words. And he took that to the Stooges and like in songwriting, like to like not use more than 24 discrete or distinct words in a song, and then like, you know, minimal number of chords. So I've been really striving to see what I can do with those kinds of limits,
constraints,
parameters. So I Found You is definitely one of those, you know, where it becomes about taking a few key lines and reusing them, redeploying them in a way that propels the song forward. And is successful, you know, hopefully, and, you know, and isn't redundant. But it's a great exercise.
Yeah.
And I've continued to try to work that way.
I found you. I found you here. And I lost myself.
I saw on your website fables. You write these fables.
Right.
How did you start doing that?
I've always written for the page as well. I went to Bard College I was in their graduate program, an MFA program for writing. I got accepted as a poet, and I was a poet who was desperate to make it to the right hand margin. I really wanted to write stories, but I wanted to write really, again, discreet, tight, small stories that kind of didn't take up more space than a song takes up. And was always a huge fan of folktales and modern folktales and parables in the way like Franz Kafka, besides writing these short stories, wrote some very, very, very short stories. So that's kind of the world my writing for the page inhabits, are these sort of parable-like fable, but modern day fictions.
Tell me now about I Hold in My Hand, a single.
Yeah. It's so fun and so addictive. I want to put out vinyl all the time, which is like the biggest waste of money.
It's so satisfying.
It's really,
to have it. Like,
it's a real thing. It's like we grew up with real things, and this is a real thing. This is the first time my music's taken the form of a real thing.
And how did you decide to put out this particular song?
Yeah, I put out, it's like the Pushbacks, the Stephen Clair and the Pushbacks album came out in January, and did a lot of pushing to get it out there, mm-hmm. And heard and written about to whatever degree. And it seems this day and age more than ever, generating fresh content is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made a handful of music videos, which has been really fun. And I'm not ready to make a record all of a sudden.
You can't be.
as much as I'd like to. So there's this record that I made like almost 10 years ago. And it was right at the time when I sort of slowed down touring and everything because I was a new dad and
starting the school,
et cetera. So I kind of felt like that record, to my satisfaction, never really saw the light of day.
Right.
So this track in particular, it's called The Women I'm Not Married To, which is more about the narrator than the women. I wanted to remix it and see if I could do some things with it that would push it into a space that felt compatible with what I'm doing right now. And I was so happy with this remix. We boosted and distorted the vocals a hair, and there's this great sort of barrel house piano that my friend Bill Malchow played on the track, and we made that kind of more cacophonous and more forward in the mix, almost like the piano player is trying to elbow his way to the forefront.
Uh-huh.
And I was so happy with this mix of this song, and this song always got such a great response that I thought, well, this could be a novelty single.
Yeah. The women I'm not married to, you see them in the spring out in Washington Square wearing someone else's ring. They're put together, they're something to behold. They don't appear to weather, they're never growing old. I'm grateful to all these women who don't finish my sentences or tell me what to do. Yesterday at the grocery in the checkout line, I saw a woman I'm not married to. She seemed to be just fine without me. There's also, and it's not the most important part, but since we have mentioned that the physical thing is cool,
yeah.
The design is awesome.
The design is really cool.
Who do you work with
on
that?
So, he's in Beacon. His name's Dan Wise, and he's always done all of my graphic design for as long as I've been in Beacon, for the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
An artist friend of mine painted or drew the Stephen Clair and the Pushbacks logo that covers the front, because I wanted something like that. It sort of has, I don't know, what it has, like a 1970s kind of,
yeah, I would say t-shirt 70s kinda, exactly,
you know?
70s, like thick, very serif-y,
letters. And the photo on the back, the publicity photo I've been mm-hmm. using a lot lately,
it's great,
was taken by a friend of mine who's a New York Times photographer who lives in Beacon as well, and he has this, his name's Tony, and he has this building, this like cinder block warehouse building in Newburgh across the river from where we live. He's such a pack rat, just filled with stuff, and he's built all these sort of scenarios within this building.
Oh, cool.
And he says he's thinking in his retirement, this is like where he's going to shoot, you know. So this camper, I'm standing inside a camper,
mm-hmm. coming out.
In the doorway, coming out, wearing a bathrobe, holding a guitar. This camper is inside the building.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you shoot in other of the setups, or did you choose this one? And
that one, immediately became the one that stuck.
It feels right.
Yeah.
It feels right. Yeah. Well, the record is fantastic. You're playing a couple shows. We'll mention those dates. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Stephen Clare and the Pushbacks are playing at the Linda in Albany, New York on Friday, May 18th, and they'll open for Monks of Doom at BSP in Kingston, New York on May 24th. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.